originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I am joining you tonight from our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio. And I would like to take this opportunity to thank everyone listening to us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, on Sirius 219 XM 206, and also to those of you listening to our website at horseracingradio.net. So a portion of the proceeds from this show go to a wonderful organization called the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to former riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. Folks, if you're able to help, please visit their website. That's www.pdjf.org. So joining us tonight, he's a fresh face here in Kentucky, already ranking among the top 10 riders at Churchill Downs. He's ridden from coast to coast while previously maintaining a home base in Minnesota at Canterbury Park, and that's where he grew up, watching his father ride. He's just 23 and already has 665 victories and counting, over $16 million in earnings. Alex Conchari, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, Christina?
I'm doing great, Alex. It is so great to have you here on the show. And I don't know if you remember, but when I was riding out east, I remember we would frequently ride at the same tracks out there, and you've been everywhere.
Yeah, well, first I'd like to say thanks for having me. And I remember that. I had a good time over there. I liked the racing over there. It's good racing. A lot of good trainers and horses over there on the East Coast.
Back in the day, Alex. What do you think of Kentucky now?
I love Kentucky. It's a really great opportunity to ride here. There's some of the best trainers that I grew up watching, like win all the big races, and some of the best jockeys too. That, like, I remember when I was a kid, I used to hang out in the jockeys room all the time, and we used to have big races at Canterbury called the Claiming Crown. It's held at Gulfstream now, but it used to be at Canterbury. And I remember when Julian Leperu came in and won on, he rode like 3 horses and won all the big stakes. And I said, one day I want to be like that. And I'm actually riding with him every day now. It's just, I told my girlfriend the other day, it's like a dream come true.
That has to be a good feeling, being surrounded by great people, great riders, and knowing that, you know, you're establishing yourself. Like I said, you're already in the top 10 in the rankings here at Churchill, and you have to be pretty proud of that fact, given that you haven't been here that long.
Yes, it's kind of, I don't really keep track of the standings. I just try to ride my horses every day, but my girlfriend did tell me that the other day, and obviously we care about it, but I just try not to pay attention. I just try to ride each horse, you know.
So what first brought you here to Kentucky?
Well, after I've had a good meet at Oakland, that's where I go in the winter every year. I won my first race over there, and after I had a couple good meets, I had some people calling me to go a couple different places, and like for the summertime, I just always kind of found myself back in my home track because it's where I grew up, and my family's there. My little niece is over there, and I got all my friends that grew up coming and cheering me out at the race every night, and I just love the racing over there.
But you just
I never really moved to another place, but like after Oakland this year, I had a couple options. Like Doug O'Neill actually called me from California and wanted me to take Tom Canoes and was going to give me a good opportunity to ride over there. And I thought about the options. I looked at like houses and everything, and me and my girlfriend, we looked at places, and I didn't really know what to do, like if I wanted to make a risk and go over there again. So I called my agent from Arkansas that I have over there. His name's Gene Short, and I asked him what he thinks I should do, because he's been a good mentor for me, like on and off the track. So he told me, he's like, let me think about it, and I'll call you tomorrow. And he actually did call me the next day, or maybe it was 2 days later, but he's like, I want you to do this. He's like, you know, I always guide you in the right direction, and I wouldn't steer you wrong. And he told me that he thought California is a great opportunity, but he called around, and one of his buddies was actually open, who used to be represent Corey Lannery, who's been leading rider in Kentucky for I don't know how many titles he has, but he's a great rider, and he used to represent him. So I decided to take the opportunity and come here with Jaws. Actually, I'm working with him right now. So,
didn't you have a couple trainers you rode for suggest Kentucky as well? I know Chris Hartman's actually the one who gave me your phone number to contact you, and he's really? He always speaks very highly of you, Alex. So I read an article where he kind of pushed you to come to Kentucky as well.
Yeah, well, I actually I started riding for him a little bit at Oakland this year, and I actually ended up riding at the end of the meet the Arkansas Derby for him on a horse that broke the maiden, Shackleford horse named Grandpa's Dream. And he pushed me to come here. And there's another guy in Oakland that I ride a lot for. His name's Jimmy DeVito, and he ships some of his better horses to Kentucky, and he's been one of my big supporters since I was an apprentice in Chicago. He's put me on a lot of good horses and given me a lot of great opportunities. So I had another one of my buddies. His name is Zach Sims. His father is Gary Sims, and we actually had I ride a nice horse for him named Double Tough, and it was just like a lot of people like that kind of putting it in my ear to come here, and it just felt right. Like I ride with a lot of these guys in Oakland, and I ride for a lot of these outfits that come to Kentucky, and I kind of lose that business when I leave Oakland. And also Randy Morris has been a big supporter and reason that I come here. So it's been a lot of people that kind of influenced me to come here.
So is that the game plan then, Alex, to build up this Kentucky business, and then you go to Oaklawn every winter, and then that business transfers back and forth?
Yeah, it's kind of, I've been, some people say that I kind of hop around a lot, and I've tried a lot of different places, I've rode a lot of different tracks, but to me, I don't think, I've been hopping around, but I've been having fun while I'm doing it, and I don't think I don't go in anywhere expecting anything. I just go in and work hard and try to just do my best, you know? So I just like to get, I would like to find like a home base, you know? I've been young and having fun, and I'm not old, but I'm 23, and I'd like to find a place where I can just kind of like settle down and try to ride you around, find a circuit, you know?
Juggy Alex Conchari is joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Alex, let's go back a little bit. You've made several references to maybe moving around a lot, and you mentioned California and Chicago and East Coast. And so I want to learn how this all started. And I mentioned during the introduction, your father rode, and you said you grew up in the jocks room. So was this always what you wanted to do?
Yeah, well, I grew up playing sports. I grew up in Minnesota. Just a little background on me. My father, he was born and raised in Peru, and he came here when he was 19 years old to America. And he couldn't get a jockey's license at first because he was illegal, but he ended up getting the jockey's license and getting his paperwork done. But he came here to America, and he's been all over. He's been to Gulfstream. Back when Hialeah was around, he was in Hialeah, Calder. He worked in – he galloped in New York for years. He actually galloped for Lucien Laurent, the guy who had Secretariat.
Yeah.
And he's been around the game for a while. Like, a lot of places I go, there'll be people, older guys that are like, oh, I'm good friends with your dad. And it's just kind of grew up in the business, so got put into it from him. There's pictures of me when I'm just me and my brother. My brother's also a jockey too. But there's pictures of us when we're just like little kids, like little babies, and we got like little helmets on or whatever, like riding little plastic horses or no. So, but yeah, my father was a jockey, and he rode here. I don't know how many years he rode, but he didn't ride too many. He's just kind of one of the guys that have done everything, and he keeps a couple horses. Like, he still trains to this day, and I still help him in the mornings when I can. But I've won races for him. My brother's won races for him. And I grew up playing sports my whole life, and I originally thought I was going to be a professional soccer player. And I come to realize, like, horses are my passion. I got my first job at the track when I was 10 years old, cleaning buckets, just so I could. This girl, she's like, I'll teach you everything I can, and she let me ride the pony every week and or every day when after I was done working, and I had to learn how to put the saddle on myself and do everything. And I actually graduated from Groom Elite, the program like for that the grooms take, when I was like, I want to say I was about 12 years old. And but the way that me and my brother, we learned how to ride was me and him both worked, started getting jobs, just helping out at the track. Like, when we were pretty young, and my brother actually had a big influence on me. He wanted to be a jockey too, and we both worked and saved up enough money to buy ourselves a couple of ponies, and we used to gallop the ponies at, like, after training and in like the little grassy field, and we'd go around the training track. They'd kick us off, and back in the day. And eventually I started getting on my dad's horses in the barn. My dad used to hold me with the shank for at least a couple weeks before he let me go. But I would jog around the barn, inside the barn, and shed real horses. And finally, one day, the first time I ever got on a horse with someone else, I snuck away from my dad. I must have been like 14, 15 years old. I thought I could gallop anything, and I ended up getting run off with four times around the training track, and my dad gave out, and he was just laughing. And basically from there, it just, you know how once the racing gets into you, you just kind of never leaves you. And I'd be in school Googling stuff about horse racing, looking at the Kentucky Derby contenders, and just eventually, like, when my parents saw how dedicated I was, my mom always said I'd have to finish high school, but when she saw my dedication, I used to lift weights and exercise and in my room every night, and I would practice on the equalizer at my house in front of a mirror, and I'd go for runs every day. And when I remember, like, sometimes I'd catch, like, my parents, like, following me in the car, just making sure I was all right when I was running. And when they saw I was dedicated and I got my school all set up so I could finish school online with Minnesota Virtual High School. And when they saw I wasn't quite finished with my school, but I had like everything lined up to be finished early, they let me move to Chicago, and I started working horses for a bunch of big barns over there, like Wayne Catalano, and just really like building connections with the trainers and giving them the confidence that I could handle a horse in the morning. So when I did get the chance in the afternoon, that they would have confidence in me. So I used to actually, when I was 16, 17 years old, I would I lived in above the dorms, or in the dorms at the racetrack. My parents, basically, they when they saw I had everything set up to finish high school and I had a job set up, a guy came to Canterbury, Rafael Flores, and he actually won the stakes race at Canterbury for two-year-olds. He said that he could give me a job in Chicago, so my parents saw that I had a set-up job, place to stay in the dorms, and they basically told me it's up to you to make your dreams come true, and I just worked hard every day. I got on as many horses as I could, and I wanted to actually wait a little bit longer before I started riding, but I just got a big push, and people put it in my head that I would get too big, and so I started riding probably a little sooner than I was a little green at first, and just be a sponge and learn as much as I could from the older riders, and still, like, you know, this business, you learn something new every day. So
exactly.
I started, I rode my first couple races in the right at the end of the year in 2011 in Chicago at Hawthorne race course. And I didn't win a race, but ran a couple of seconds and learned a lot from my experiences. And the agent that I had in Chicago said he thinks it'd be a good idea if we went to Oakland in the winter, because a couple of guys that in Chicago said they would ride me on almost the whole barn, most of the barn. So I went to Oakland, and it was a big risk because I knew it was like a really tough track, and guys like some of my idols, like Calvin Burrell, were there, and Robbie Alvarado, and Nakatani, and some of them really tough guys go to Oakland, and I ended up winning the first race of the meet in 2012.
Wow.
Never won a race, and nobody even knew I was a 10-pound apprentice, and so people were like kind of...
Took notice.
Yeah.
They took notice after that. And Alex, let me stop you really quickly, because I want to go back and you mentioned a couple things while you were growing up, and you said your brother was a jockey. Who started riding first then?
My older brother Patrick. He's actually riding Inter Paradise right now in Arizona.
So you kind of did you look up to him and follow his path a little bit as well?
Oh yeah, exactly. I actually used to, Hawthorne is kind of like a place where they have a lot of off-track betting in Chicago, so not a lot of people go there. So I used to take my laptop up in the grandstand and watch all the races every day. And my brothers, even if my brother wasn't one, I'd go up there and watch all the races and do my schoolwork. And I just kind of learned, like, when my brother would make mistakes and stuff, I'd be right there with him, like, learning and just trying to watch all the races. At that time, Florent Giroux was dominating in Chicago, and he was setting all the records. And I really liked watching Florent Giroux ride, and guys like Francisco Torres that came in, they were just so talented on horses, and I'd like just going and watching them every day, and then like watching the race in New York, like watching Ramon Dominguez and Javier Casiano and those guys, and I still like watching races. Like right now I'm watching the replays from Aqueducts, and I love watching like really good riders ride, like Irad Ortiz and Jose Ortiz and Manuel Franco and those guys. Like There's so many great riders in America right now.
Would you say a young kid came up to you and said they wanted to be a jockey? Is that something you would tell a young person to do? Watch as many races as they can and pick out certain riders to follow and learn their style from?
Yeah, exactly. If you want to look up to those guys, like those are the guys you want to look up to, like on and off the track, because the success that they have on the track has to do with how they are off the track. They're professionals, and they're just that's who you want to be. Like guys like Edgar Prado and Ramon Dominguez, you know.
Definitely,
that's
yeah.
What my dad told me, to look up to those guys.
Not just good riders, but classy individuals as well, and they handle themselves well. Definitely good people to look up to. And someone else who I personally looked up to, Alex, you mentioned the Groom Elite program. Is Dr. Max still running that?
Who is that?
Reed McClellan?
I'm not sure. We had so many people come in and speak, and I did it when I was like 12 years old. That's 11 years ago.
Oh, you were 12? Wow, they let people go into the program that young.
Yeah, there was actually a kid younger than me, and he was like 10 years old.
That's incredible. Do you think that was also a really good learning tool for you to understand the horse on the ground before you actually, you know, got a leg up in the saddle? Do you think that's an important thing to learn to be able to groom a horse and to handle the horse on the ground?
Oh yeah, I think that's like one of the most important things. Sorry, my little French bulldog's biting my finger right now, but. I think that's one of the most important things, like, to know the horse, and because they are animals, and you got to know their tendencies. When you know their tendencies, it makes everything a lot easier. But the Groom Elite program also gave me good connections with, because one of the people that helped teach the program when I was in the program was Jamie Ness, and that was back when he was training at Canterbury, and as you know, he's one of the top trainers in the East Coast. So when I came back there, like 10 years later, whatever it was, he remembered me from when I was in that program.
It helped build those important relationships. Definitely sounds like, Alex. And you talk about getting to know the animal. Now, I had someone ask me this question just yesterday, actually. When you're riding a horse for the very first time, you've never worked a horse in the mornings, and you have, you know, 5-8 minutes with the horse in the post parade, what do you do to really get a feel for the horse?
Well, for me, like, the way my dad taught me and the way I learned was, like, I love to, like, pet horses and get nervous horses. I love to ride nervous horses because I like the challenge of trying to get them to relax, like, I love to pet horses, and I love to cut horses away from the pony, and just, I watched a lot of guys do that, and you don't have to cut every horse away from the pony, but I always ask the trainer if I can cut the horse from the pony, and I just like to get to know them. Like, sometimes they'll tell me, oh, he has a light mouth, and just stay off his mouth, but I say, like, thank you, but I can already figure that out just when you know, from riding the horses, you can see it, like, how the horses are, and but yeah, those are just some of the things I like to do. I like to cut them away from the pony and just kind of gallop them and feel how, like, I like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, you get a feel, and it's better. You have a better opportunity to get a true feel for the horse when it's just you and the animal versus you and the pony and the horse.
Exactly.
I definitely get that. And I've had conversations with other guests on the show, and some of your best riders do that. You know, Julie Crone would always take horses away from the pony. Kendrick Carmouche.
Yeah.
Every time I watch.
He's a great rider.
Oh, yeah.
Every
time.
I was just watching his replay of the Green Gato, actually, today.
Yep. Yep. And he loves doing that in the post parade. And I think that's. It was actually very important to get a good feel for your animal. Jockey Alex Conjari is joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Alex, you also mentioned when you were in Chicago and you felt like you maybe started a little bit too early, but people were pushing you, and you said you were worried about getting too big. Was that... Do you struggle with your weight? Is that something you have to consciously work on?
Well, I wouldn't say I struggle because I'm not that big. I'm about 5'5" or 5'4". I don't know how tall I am, but people just, you know how it is in the business. People love to be negative, and I just, like, the same people that told me that I would get too big to be a jockey, that years later, when I come back and I am riding, they're the ones that are complaining because I can't ride their horse in a race. And so I would say to a young rider that's trying to ride and might be a little on the taller side, because we're not all built, like, really short. We all can't be, like, Pat Day's size. And I would say to a young guy or girl that wants to be a jockey, if someone's telling you can't do something, just use that as fuel to to fuel your fire to win races and do a good job in this business. And
I'm on
the taller side for riders. I'm on the taller side for, but I'm not heavy though. I try to keep my weight at like 114, and in the summer, you know, in the wintertime, it's a little harder to keep the weight off. Like today, I'm gonna have to go run, probably lose a pound or two, and with some plastic on. But I like doing that stuff. I like exercising. Sorry, my Frenchie's jumping all over me.
Do you get to eat much? I mean, what's your diet?
Yeah, I do. Me and my girlfriend, we're actually starting. We're starting a juice cleanse right now. She just went and got a bunch of juices at Whole Foods, and we're gonna do some meal plans too. But
that doesn't sound like fun, Alex. I'll be honest with you. A juice cleanse?
No, it doesn't.
Do you try to eat a lot of protein or vegetables, or do you pretty much eat whatever you want just in small quantities when you're not on a juice cleanse?
Yeah, I try to eat. I'm watching a replay right now. Someone just dropped a whip. I try to eat like smaller portions. One of the things I like to eat in the morning is Nature Valley bars. I'm addicted to those. That's like my favorite food. My girlfriend told me that the other day. If I had a favorite food, it'd be Nature Valley bars. But so, I like eating that. I like eating salmon, one of my favorite foods. I had that last night and have some packed up in the fridge right now. Grilled chicken breast. I like to cook too, so I like kind of like making different things.
Well, Alex, it is time for a very quick commercial break. Folks, stay with us. You are listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. Remington Park's leading rider in wins, Ramon Vasquez, had a solid week as he led North America in wins with 10. Vasquez finished the week winning 40% and coming in the money on 68% of his mounts. Tyler Gaffleone had a great Sunshine Millions preview day at Gulfstream West. Gaffleone won the Juvenile Filly Sprint aboard Silver Bay and the Juvenile Filly's Turf aboard Homemade Salsa. Gaffleone finished the week with 6 wins, 6 seconds, and 5 third-place finishes from 30 mounts. Finally, the Animal Element Jockey of the Week, Edgar Zayas, dominated Sunshine Millions Preview Day on Saturday. Zayas had mounts in 10 races, 8 of which being stakes races. The Puerto Rican native won the Juvenile Sprint aboard Wildcat's Legacy, the Juvenile Turf aboard Naughty Bowie, and the Millions Classic Preview aboard Mr. Jordan. Zayas finished the week with 7 wins and 31 starts, giving him a win rate of 23% and an in-the-money rate of 55%. John Parada's newest book, Half a Chance, is available now at jockeytalk360.com and for Kindle at amazon.com. Half a Chance is the story of a down-on-his-luck jockey agent who finds himself entangled in a web of deceit and larceny and provides the kind of entertaining read that is ideal for any racing fan. Visit jockeytalk360.com for more information. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. For all the latest news in the jockey world, visit jockeytalk360.com and follow us on Twitter at Jockey Talk.
This is Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigal, and I am joined tonight by jockey Alex Kanjari. And Alex, before the break, we were talking about your early career, how you went to Chicago and then you went to Oakland. I want to ask you now, you said maybe you started riding maybe too early. And I think the same thing about my own career personally as well, for the record. But I think, you know, we all are excited and we want to ride as soon as possible. But describe to me, if you remember, what it was like riding your very first race.
Oh, my first race, I was telling someone the other day, I was terrible my first race, but the trainer told me to go to the front, and I ended up opening seven lengths, 21:43.
Oh, no.
In the allowance race, and I caught on quick, though. I learned from my mistakes, and tried not to make the same mistakes twice, you know, but I didn't. You know, we all start, man. We're not the best, but
I don't think anyone.
Yeah, I was laughing. I watched the replay maybe 3-4 months ago on my first race, and it made me laugh because I was terrible.
Well, you've come a long ways, Alex, and you mentioned opening up by seven, going 21:43, and that is what I think. My personal opinion is one of the toughest things to learn is to develop that internal clock. And how did you get better at that?
Well, just I would say if you want to get a better clock on a horse, sometimes some tracks feel differently. I know you know this from your experience as a jockey, but working a lot of horses, you get a better feel for the track and how fast you're going. And like I can work horses, and I don't even need to be counting. Sometimes I count the first, like, eighth of a mile, but just, like, the feel of the horse, like, how fast they're moving in the stretch and how slow they start and everything, I can tell within a second. Usually I'm right, but if I'm off, it's usually by, like, a second or so. But I'm never, like, a couple seconds off. But I would say just the experience of working horses and getting on a lot of horses is the best way to get a good clock in your head, but I did start, I don't know if everyone starts this way, but just going one Mississippi, and I used to practice with the stopwatch at my house when I was an apprentice, so see if I was right.
So people are on the track.
It's just something, once you do it so much, it's kind of built into you.
So people on the track, when you were working horses, they'd see you go by, and you'd be counting out loud, one Mississippi, two Mississippi, is that what you would do?
Yeah, but I wouldn't count out loud. I just count in my head, like, and I'd ask the trainer when I go, or the clocker, how fast I went, and if I was right, I'd get, you know how it goes. It's just experience. You got to do it to get better at it.
Well, you quickly did get better. As you mentioned, you went to Oaklawn, and you won the first race there. And
yeah,
that had to be a great feeling.
Yeah, I won the opening race of the meet, and nobody kind of knew who I was. And then I ended up riding the third race. That was my second mount of the meet, and I ended up winning that race too. So the first day I won, they didn't even know it was my first win. So I got a vote. I didn't get painted too bad. They painted me after the second one, and it wasn't too bad.
The initiation that most jockeys get, of course. You're referring to I got buckets of water and eggs and baby powder and shaving cream and everything else. But at least I didn't get you too bad, Alex, although it is a fond memory, of course. But so you have the bug, you're at Oaklawn Park, and you're getting noticed now because you just won two races right off the bat. And describe to me your apprentice year and where you went from there.
Well, my apprentice year, I was kind of a little sad about it for a little bit, because after Oaklawn, I ended up, people started calling me to go to New York and other places, and I ended up going back to Chicago, and I went to Hawthorn, and I rode for like the last week over there, and I won four races, and so I made a good little splash to start out, and so I was getting calls to go like different places, and I got a call from New York when I was at Arlington, once Arlington started, and I was actually second in the standings for being rider the day I left Arlington, and my agent was pretty mad because the day I left, he turned back 13 calls for races, and like it seemed like we were going to do good and maybe be leading rider, fight right there for leading rider, you know, and so I ended up going to New York and started riding at like different tracks over there, Delaware, New York, New Jersey, Monmouth Park, and I was winning races at all the tracks. And I just the day I got hurt, I won a race the day before in New York for Phil Serpy, and my agent called me on my way home and he said, "I know you're not gonna like this, but you got to go work a horse in Delaware in the morning, because on the dark days, this trainer is going to put you on winners over there." So I ended up getting hurt over there. I was working a set with Ricardo Santana and another jockey, Juan Molina, and my saddle actually slipped and fell underneath the horse. And it was probably to my own doing, because I had the saddle tight, really tight, but I guess it wasn't tight enough. It was on a little baby with small withers, and saddle fell underneath the horse, and I hit the ground really hard, and the horse behind me hit me, and I ended up breaking my shoulder. And I was kind of disappointed about that, because I thought I lost my opportunity, because I had the apprentice in New York the same time as Jose Ortiz, and it just seemed like the day before I got hurt, Kieran McLaughlin texted my agent, and he showed me the text. He said, "Do you have that new apprentice that came here?" And he's like, I like what I see." And it just looked like I was going to start getting a little business in New York, and I was just kind of disappointed about that, and I broke my shoulder. So I went back home to Minnesota. I had never rode a race in Minnesota, and the leading trainer over there, Mac Robinson, he saw me at the races one day with my sling, and he said when I started feeling better, I could come get rehabilitated on his horses. So I wasn't going to ride at Canterbury. I was going to go back to New York with my agent, Bobby Caceres, at the time. And he just ended up naming me on horses after I was galloping for him for like a week. He named me on two stakes races my first day back. And as an apprentice, when you see stakes races, you get all excited. And I ended up riding in my hometown for a couple weeks. And then I went back to Arlington. And I came right at the end of Arlington, like the last couple days, and the last race I rode at Arlington, I won, and it kind of left a good little spot, like made a good splash for me for Hawthorn. And on the opening day of Hawthorn in 2012, I won four races at the meet over there. I was planning on going back to New York for the wintertime for Aqueduct, and then I ended up just staying in Chicago because I was leading rider at the time, and I ended up winning my first leading rider title. And there were some good riders there that year. It was Florent Giroux and Francisco Torres, and just some good old riders like E.T. Barrett is one guy who helped me out a lot over there. He's a good speed rider, and he rode in New York for a lot of years. And from there, I went to Oaklawn every year, and I've just gone a couple different places. In September is usually when I kind of venture out and try new things. Like I went back to the East Coast one year to ride in 2015 to ride for that trainer I ride for, Mac Robertson, and another year I went to California. I ended up getting hurt in California. I broke my collarbone on the turf course over there, and last year I went to Remington Park to ride for Steve Asmussen. It was a good little opportunity I had, and just kind of been all over since then. I like seeing new places and meeting new trainers and seeing the trainers like that I've names that are riding for trainers that I've seen the names on big races and TV. I like trying new things, you know.
You've got that gypsy lifestyle going on,
yeah,
Alex.
Exactly.
All over the place. So let me ask you this: what's your favorite racetrack? You've been to so many.
My favorite racetrack. Honestly, probably my favorite racetrack I've ever been to. The most beautiful racetrack I've been to is Del Mar for sure. But I'd say my favorite racetrack would probably be my hometown racetrack, Canterbury Park, just because it's where I grew up and they get really big crowds out there and I just have a lot of fun when I'm riding there. But now I have to say Churchill because it's like kind of like a dream come true. It's hard to pick a favorite.
Good answer, Alex. Good answer. You mentioned Canterbury getting so many people out to the races and what a fun place it is to ride at. You also are a regular at Oaklawn, we've discussed. And that's another racetrack that really brings out the crowds. People really come out to enjoy the races. And you don't see that at so many racetracks anymore, which is obviously sad that you mentioned Chicago, so many off-track betting places and OTBs and online wagering and everything else. What do you think it is that Canterbury and Oaklawn are doing right and what other racetracks can do to bring out more people?
Well, I'd say Oaklawn is, it's just people in Arkansas love horse racing. I think it's something like you go to the races and you see, like my agent said, the first year we went there, he was at the races and he saw a little, he said he must have been 3 or 4 years old. And he said, Mama, I want to pick the trifecta in like a little southern accent. And that just says it right there. Like, I don't know, but Canterbury for sure is like more of a family oriented track. Like they have like a huge playground and little grassy area where kids can play. And I think that's why like Canterbury gets big crowds is because the people there, like they like, families like bringing out their kids and watching the horses run, and they have like face painting and a petting zoo for the kids. Like Churchill gets pretty big crowds because they do the same thing like that, and Oaklawn is, they have the same stuff like that. They have like the family day and like free hot dogs, you know the stuff that brings out the people.
Yeah, focus on the families and making it a family event. You know, that's how you grew up, going to the racetrack, and so many other people have good memories of the track from a very young age. And speaking of family, Alex, you mentioned you've won races for your dad in Minnesota, and I'm assuming you never rode a race with your dad, or did you work horses alongside him in the mornings?
No, my dad, he's too chubby now to get on horses. We kind of just mess with them sometimes. But no, he still gets on. Like, my little brother is actually learning how to gallop horses right now. And my little brother, my dad made him learn the same way that we learned. My little brother cleans stalls. And my dad, when I was a kid, one of the things that inspired me to ride, like, was he hopped on a horse with no helmet, tennis shoes, and he's got a big beer belly, and he galloped his horse around there with one finger like it was nothing. So he's kind of older now. He doesn't get on his own horses, but he for damn sure would if we let him.
If he could.
But, yeah.
So your younger brother's getting involved now, and do you talk to him? Do you try to give him advice and show him the ropes?
Yeah, you know, he's a smart kid. I think he's a little more book smart than I was. So I'm trying to steer him away because I want him to do something else, like be like a doctor or something, you know.
Really?
But yeah, but if this is really what he wants to do, like as much as I try to steer him away, he's still like, you can see the passion's there, like. And if this is what he wants to do, then I'll support him as much as I can. But I try to teach him. Like I was there, and after the horses were done we're done training, he would go in the round pen with one of my dad's horses, and the horse actually was like 50-1. And after my little brother got on, the horse wasn't hitting the board, and after my little brother went jogging him in the round pen, the horse ran a good third and got beat ahead. So I think he'll be all right.
So you're
That's
trying
what he wants
to
do, I'll support him.
You're trying to steer him away though, because you mentioned so book smart. So
yeah, exactly.
if we were sitting down and you were talking to your brother and you were telling him, you know, all the good reasons to be a jockey and all the negative points, what would those be? What are the highlights of this career and what are the low points of it?
Well, obviously, you know, this game is up and down. It's like a roller coaster. But he's been there. He's seen it all. He's seen my injury. He's seen me on the couch with healing up and waiting to get back to riding. But he's still not scared about it. But I'd say the highs of racing and the good things about it is you get to go up every day. And for me, it's like I told my girlfriend the other day, when your passion and your career meet, it's a great thing. Because like every day I get up and I want to get on horses and I have fun riding horses, and I'd say that's an awesome thing. Like instead of sitting in a cubicle, like doing something that you don't like, people are like, "Oh, I got to go to work," and I get excited that I get to go to work because it's an awesome thing, and you can make a good living at it. But I'd say like the lows is definitely it's a very dangerous thing. It's a very dangerous sport, and like, you know, as a jockey, you got that in the back of your head, but that's not what you think about every day.
Yeah, you can't. You mentioned your injuries. You had the saddle slip at Delaware. You broke your collarbone in California. And that's why I had to retire, because of injuries. But how do you go out there every day and an ambulance is following you around the racetrack and you know it can happen? You know, Chris McCarron always used to tell me it's not if, it's when you get hurt. It's just a matter of how bad it's going to be. But you can't think about that. But how do you just focus on riding and kind of push that to the back of your mind? How do you do that?
Well, it's just I'm very comfortable on horses. And, like, to me, that's not what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about getting along with my horse. But I do say my prayers before the races, and I thank God that he's keeping me safe, and I feel really safe out there, because especially here in Kentucky, these guys ride with so much class, and then it's amazing because they know exactly where they are in the race, and they ride tight and they race ride, but they don't make it dangerous. So I feel very safe riding, and you know, sometimes things happen in the race, like anything can happen. A horse can take a bad step, a horse can get hurt their leg in a race, or you know, anything can happen, but I just kind of, I never think about that, and you know how it is. If you're scared, you shouldn't be riding. That's like, I remember hearing a quote about Calvin Burrell one time. He said, if I ever get scared, the day I get scared is the day that I'll retire. So
you got to focus on winning.
Have confidence, and yep, exactly.
So I had a group of folks out at Churchill the other day, actually, and they were asking a couple of the guys about the atmosphere in the jocks room. And you just mentioned that you're going out there and everyone rides tight, but they ride safe because they're all concerned for their own safety and everyone else's. But they are your competitors, and it's a very unique situation in the fact that everyone goes back to the same locker room. You don't usually see that in really any other sport. So what is that atmosphere like? Describe to our audience what that's like in the jocks room.
Well, this is a business where it's kind of every man for himself, but at the same time, you got to keep the business part and the friendship part with the friendship part. I tell my friends, like, I'm friends with a lot of these guys, and most, I'd say I'm friends with everyone, but like, out on the racetrack is out on the racetrack. You can't give an inch, and you can't, you know what I'm saying? Like, riding the race is different because you're riding for your people, and these guys understand that we're all riding for our own people.
Alex, have you ever seen a fight in the jocks room?
Seen plenty of them.
Plenty of them.
These guys, you know how it gets. Like, sometimes it gets heated, but I mean, I've never seen, like, every time I've seen something like that, like an altercation, it's always people shake hands at the end, and they're good.
Because they got to go right back out there and ride with them again, so they might as well get over it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, Alex, when you're getting ready to ride, when you're on a, you know, your schedule and you're riding 5 days a week or whatever, and how are you preparing for your race days? Are you watching replays? You just mentioned you were watching replays from Aqueduct earlier, so I'm assuming you watch a lot of replays. Do you study the racing form? What do you do?
Oh yeah, I do all of that. I have a replay account with Equibase, and I probably watch the night before. I like to keep it fresh in my head, so I watch all the replays the night before. My girlfriend probably gets sick of it because I'll be watching replays in bed of horses that I'm about to ride, or just like races that I like. You know, I like watching replays. It's one of my hobbies. But I work horses almost. My agent. It was funny because my agent texted me on Sunday. He's like, for the first time, I can say you finally have a morning off sleeping. So I slept in on Monday, but I like to go out and work as many horses as I can, and just kind of stay fit that way, getting on horses. But
so you don't have to go to the gym because you're getting on so many horses in the morning and in the afternoons. You don't really have to go to the gym.
Oh, yeah, I just don't have to. As much as I go to the gym, I go to the gym as much as I need to stay fit. If I'm getting on horses, I don't have to go as much. But if it's like snowed in Oakland, it gets snowed in a lot and people won't train or work horses. So I have to go to the gym a lot more because I have to maintain that weight so I can make the weight for the race day.
You mentioned your agent gave you the morning off. I'm curious, Alex, because whenever I was on that schedule and riding and working horses in the morning, and I was used to waking up at, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning, sleeping in, I couldn't really sleep in because my internal clock was already set, and then I was just like kind of didn't know what to do with myself. Are you similar in that? You just wake up automatically and you're ready to go?
Oh yeah, it was my day off, but I still went to Krispy Kreme and bought donuts and coffee for the bond that I won for. I won Dale Roman's his 703rd Churchill Downs win, which made him the all-time leading Churchill Downs trainer. So I like bringing the donuts and coffee and stuff to the people myself because it lets, like, the grooms and stuff know that you appreciate the work that they put in to get the horse to the winner's circle. And it's not just one person that does it. It's a whole team effort and a lot of preparation and time that they put in. And they're with the horses more than anyone, so I like to let them know that I appreciate their hard work to get us the win.
You mentioned that, and I'm glad you said that. I completely forgot you did win that race for Dale Romans, which made him the all-time leading trainer at Churchill, and they had the winner's circle ceremony, and there you were, and that had to be pretty cool to win that for Dale.
Oh, that was amazing, because that's just riding good horses like that is an amazing feeling. Dale Romans has some of the best horses in the country, and he's one of the best trainers in the country. And I don't know if he's in the Hall of Fame yet, but I'm sure he will be if he's not already in there. And it's just kind of, it's a dream come true, you know?
Do you have certain goals for yourself? Like, do you, you know, you have in your mind, oh, I can't wait to get to that 1,000th winner, or wait to ride my first Derby, or what are your goals?
My goals every year, I like, I just try to do my best, and I want to keep improving every year. Every year, I'd like to see my earnings and my wins higher than the year before, and I just have, I know it takes time, but I just, step by step, and I try to make small goals every day, and I have big goals. Someday I want to, you know, every jockey wants to win the Kentucky Derby. You'd be lying if you said you didn't want to win the Kentucky Derby. So I have goals like that. I'd like to win a Breeders' Cup race. I'd like to win the Kentucky Derby someday. And someday I want to be one of those guys like Irad Ortiz or Jose Ortiz or John Velasquez or you know, one of the top guys. Someday soon.
I see that happening pretty soon here, Alex. And we only have about 2 minutes left, but tell me some of your favorite horses you've ridden so far.
Well, on the top of the list is a horse I rode named Hotshot Kid. He's a really, really nice horse to ride. He gave me good exposure. I broke his maiden. He's a Minnesota bred like me. He's from Minnesota, and usually those horses, it's tough for them to compete around an open company, and he broke his maiden in the main special weight at Oaklawn on Arkansas Derby Day, like two races before the Arkansas Derby, and so he's pretty special in my heart. I don't know if I won six in a row or how many did I win on him in a row, but I won a bunch of stakes races on him this summer in Canterbury, and he ended the year competing in the biggest race they run over there, the Mystic Lake Derby on the grass. I think it's 200 or 300,000, I can't remember. But he only got beat four lengths. He ran fifth, and after running hard all summer, it's just he's probably my favorite horse I've ever rode. But there's another horse that stands out to me. He was just a claiming horse, but I won every time I rode on him. Besides the last time I rode on him, he finished third. Kind of getting older, I think he was 9 years old, but bank account. He was one horse in Chicago I rode that I won a lot of races on, and some horses have cool personalities and they just stick out to you, and those are two that have stuck out to me, and two horses I've rode here in Kentucky that are on my list right now. The two horses I'm looking forward to most are horse I rode named Mojo Man for Jimmy DeVito, and that horse actually Storm Runner. I think he's one of the nicest horses I've been on. He's only a 2-year-old too, so I think he'll be getting a lot better with time. But
good.
I'd say that those horses are my favorites right now.
Well, sounds like good stuff's coming up for you soon, Alex. And good luck with all your future goals. Good luck in Oaklawn, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Folks, if you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website. That's www.horseracingradio.net. And also check out Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. While you're there, you can listen to all of our other great shows. Trainer Talk, Equine Forum, Express Bet Radio, the list goes on. And be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Dallapina, I'm your host, Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.